You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today we are talking about plotting your career and preparing the terrain, an interview with Diana Stewart. And this is a very special episode because we recorded this interview during a webinar. And so there are also listener questions today. And now the music. Now, recently we talked about a career outside of statistics with the interview with Lucy. Today we are talking about the career inside statistics. And there's a lot of similarities between having a great career as a statistician, having a great career as a programmer. And Diana has presented quite often about this topic. So watch out for a really, really nice interview with her. If you like this podcast, then please tell your colleagues about it. They may benefit from it as well. And being a nice colleague means you're also helping your colleagues. So tell your colleagues about it. Very, very simple. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Visit the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to this live recording of a podcast episode. It's a really, really nice opportunity because it's a little bit of a different setup than usual for me. Usually I'm sitting in this office and I'm just having the other person on the other side that I see, and maybe I don't even see the other person that I'm speaking with, or I'm sitting here just for myself and speaking. And today it's a different setting because we have listeners for this podcast episode directly in this setting with the webinar, which is quite nice for me to experience. And so with that, I want to give thank Diana from Veramed, who's with me on the call today, where we want to speak about career planning and how to prepare for a good career. Hi, Diana. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you, Alexander. Very well. How are you?
Very good. I'm fine as well. It's a sunny March. End of March day, and we are all in lockdown, so it's a quite unique situation. And so lots of turbulent times, but I think these turbulent times we have anyway in our industry all the time, you know, where there's a lot of mergers and acquisitions that can go on, there's pipeline failures that you can have, all kind of different changes that can have an influence on your career. And that is the topic for today, where we want to talk about how you can prepare yourself, having all these changes in mind in order to move forward with a robust career for yourself. But before we dive into this topic, Diana, maybe you can give a little bit of an introduction to the audience in terms of what you have been up to and why this topic is so much of interest for you personally.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so this is me, Diana Stewart. I'm a senior manager of programming at Veramed. I've been in the industry quite a long time. I moved over to the pharmaceutical industry in the late 90s. I have quite a variety of experience. I've worked for both big and small pharma companies. I've worked for CROs. I've worked as a contractor. I spent 10 years contracting. And I think along that path, I've experienced lots of different line management styles. And I think whilst I was contracting, I recognized that how easy it was for your career to stall, so to speak. My own career path has been somewhat convoluted. I didn't just get to programming straight out of school. I actually have a customer service background, and I started my working life anyway, at Gatwick Airport, spraying perfume on people. So it was the early 90s. There was a recession on in the UK. It was a different time. I moved into the banking industry, and eventually I discovered that I had this aptitude and a liking for programming. I went back to school, I studied, still working in the banking industry, and then moved over to the pharmaceutical industry. And then I suppose through all these various experiences, I came to the conclusion that I had quite a passion for developing people and for line management. And line management means different things to different people. For me, it's about guiding people through their professional development paths and working out what engages them and helping them to develop themselves.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, and I think that's more and more typical, that we see people from all kind of different backgrounds joining the pharma industry as a statistician or as a programmer. It's not that you kind of usually go to university and you have directly exactly that in mind, and then you start your career in a specific company. There you work for 30 years or 40 years and then kind of go through the ranks. Most of the careers, I think, are much more kind of less straight, and because people, you know, over the years see what are their strengths and what are their kind of, what do they really love, and these new opportunities unfold, and then it's about seizing these opportunities. And thinking about that, when you speak to others about their career, what kind of mindset topics do you discuss about?
I want to know about what motivates them as an individual, where their interests truly lie. Everybody is different. I think they need to recognize what their strengths are, their individual strengths are, what they're good at, what they find challenging, what they actually don't like. I think it's probably being about quite honest about with yourself about what they do and don't like. And I suppose in terms of mindset, what motivates them? So what will actually make them look at developing themselves further?
Yeah, I think that is really an important point in terms of, if you want to have a successful career, the basic for that is a very, very good understanding of yourself. And if you hear someone screaming in the background, it's my little daughter. So that is, I think, part of the lockdown. All the kids are now at home. So that gives you a little bit of a live feeling here. But coming back to the mindset, yeah, I think it's really important to have a good understanding of yourself, to have a good understanding of what are your strengths and limitations, and what motivates you. Yeah, I think from a motivation perspective, I'm always thinking about Dan Pink's kind of 3 points. There is mastery, autonomy, and purpose. And purpose is, you know, what drives you forward, what is kind of what gives you a purpose. But the important thing here is the mastery. What do you want to really develop, and what do you want to spend your time doing? What skills do you want to perfect and bring to mastery? What do you want to work on many, many days in your career? Because that, I think, for me is a successful career if you can maximize your potential in there. For me, a successful career is not necessarily that you become a VP of statistics somewhere. And I think most people actually don't want to become a VP of statistics. But that you really move the needle and get successful in the crafts that you're doing. And that can have lots of different aspects. In terms of other things about the mindset, what else do you think is important there?
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, you touched on it a bit there. I think it's recognizing that our career isn't our job title. You know, people do tend to get quite hung up on job titles. So really, it's actually recognizing what sort of range of skills make up who we are and what we do and what we want to be. Getting away from the whole job title thing is quite challenging, actually, because we sort of attribute some of our self-worth to that, I would say. So focusing on what we're capable of and what potential we have, setting ourselves reasonable objectives, achievable objectives, and we talk quite a lot about SMART objectives, don't we? And probably being open to new experiences and not being afraid to change our path, not being able to, you know, afraid to say, actually, this path I'm on is not working out. Let me move my focus slightly. Let me look at what else is going on. What skills do I have that can be matched sort of in a better direction for me?
Yeah, I think in terms of the job titles, that's a really important point, because it speaks to the fact that we tend to compare ourselves to others. Yeah, and the job titles is one way of doing that. And I'm not sure that is a really, really healthy way of progressing your career, that you always compare yourself to others, because everybody has a different background. Everybody has a different situation. And I would say it's much more interesting to look into yourself and see the others more kind of as inspirations, as kind of motivations, but not try to emulate someone else's career or try to copy someone else's career, because everybody is different and everybody had a kind of different time in their career. If you compare yourself with someone that is let's say 20 years longer in the industry, well, at the time they are, you know, your age, the industry looked completely different. There were completely different challenges like now. So focus on yourself, I think, is a key thing here. And don't get hung up on job titles. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, apart from the fact that they're completely inconsistent across the industry anyway, so there's no point in comparing at all. So as somebody who's interviewed quite a lot of people, I know that somebody coming from a company where they might be a principal programmer in one company, that might only be a senior in another company. So we always look at what have they done? What skills have they picked up? What behaviours are embedded? It's consistent kind of behaviours and experience. That's what you're looking for, and that's what we should be looking for ourselves in our career. It's not, our careers aren't these tick lists that we go through and then say, oh well, that's it, I've got to the end of the tick list, therefore I'm at this level. It's about demonstrating certain types of behaviors, certain levels of skill, I think, and that makes up who we are and what we can do. And I think the other thing is as you mentioned, you know, that somebody coming into the industry 20 years afterwards, which I have quite a lot of experience with, we recruit a lot of graduates, and they come in, and I've been in the industry for over 20 years, and they are quite intimidating because they're smart and amazing and pick up things really quickly, and they're being measured in a different way, I would say. So it's not fair to compare. You have to do the hard work of looking at everybody individually and seeing where they as an individual are going to go and where they are going to shine. And you can't compare somebody who's come in with a year's experience, even though they might be the most amazing programmer, with somebody who's got 10 years experience, who's also a good programmer, but all that other experience behind them. So
yeah. And I think the other parts that you kind of talked about was not so much getting hung up on what is the exact kind of next move you want to make in your career. I think that's a trap that you kind of focus so much. I want to go to exactly that position. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you kind of focus all your efforts, all your bets on this one position, and that may go away. You know, someone else will take it. You maybe sick during the time, it's open or whatsoever. There can be all kind of different things that is coming up. And so it's important not to kind of be so stuck in your kind of thinking with your career that is the only next move. It's more about, okay, what are your strengths and how you can grow these different strengths in these next different positions, and then have a feel for, okay, what could be all these different positions that you go into. In terms of that, any advice you can give people on how to get more kind of a more broader view on these different opportunities that could come up?
Yeah, so I suppose it's quite difficult, isn't it? Because you're within companies, your next step is usually a job title. So actually, you need to look at what makes up that next step. And different companies do it in different ways, you know. But it's much easier when you're developing somebody and they can see that next step and know all the different components that might make up that next step, because then you can take the view of, right, where do you need training, where do you need support, and which bits of this next step are the things where they're really appealing and you really want to go to, and the other bits that maybe you don't want to do. So, for example, I mean, some companies put line management in that next step up, but not everybody wants to be a line manager. And frankly, not everybody can be a line manager. They're not necessarily built to be line managers because their skills lay elsewhere. But they might be excited about another part of this. And that's the bits that you're motivated to do and to stretch yourself and challenge yourself. They're the bits to focus on.
I completely agree. There's kind of, in terms of the next step in your career, I think that can be, you know, a promotion. You stay basically more or less in your job, but you get, you know, higher salary grade and a better job title and a little more responsibilities in your job. So something, lots of companies have these kind of technical career paths, for example, where you start as a junior statistician, and you become a senior statistician, a principal statistician, and people get really creative with these kind of things. And of course, then it's kind of usually quite clear to understand, okay, what are the requirements for the next level, and to have, well, it should hopefully be clear what are the requirements of the next level. And it should be clear to you and your supervisor in order to help you get into that. That's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah. In essence, I think it's looking at, I suppose people have heard of the Peter principle. There's no point in promoting people into a position that they, you know, keep promoting them until they fail. People need to move forward in a very natural way. The progression needs to be a consistent thing. It's building on it. As you say, the point of promotion is best when somebody is already there, demonstrating that they're capable of doing that next job. And that is the best kind of progression, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's a very common rule. You get promoted when you have already demonstrated that you can perform at the next level. Then you get these additional responsibilities. And then it's of course important to work with your line manager, that he sees that he gives you the right tasks that you are also, you know, that you can show actually that you're capable of doing these things and that you also ask for it. I think that is a really, really important other mindset topic is the career is your responsibility. It's not your line managers or the CEOs or whatsoever, whoever's responsibility. It's your responsibility. And you need to leverage then your line manager, HR, whoever, you know, your external network, whoever to grow your career. But centrally is, of course, the line manager first.
Yes, absolutely. I think building that relationship with your line manager, really important, being able to have those really open discussions, because you need to be able to go to your line manager and tell them what you want. If you're not comfortable doing that, then that line management relationship's not working very well. And so it is absolutely having those discussions about what is next and what, and it's, your line manager isn't there to fix you. Your line manager is there to guide you, to help you recognize maybe what resources and support that you might require along the way. The more that an individual has about where they want to go next and maybe what training they might require, this is sort of a discussion to have with your line manager, but that drive, that motivation to get to the next step needs to come from the individual. But it's not everybody is necessarily capable of thinking in that way initially. So it's the line manager needs to kind of draw that out of the individual, maybe by asking the right sorts of questions. And as you mentioned, it's about having the right type of work. That's where the line manager can help, because then they can go to whoever is divvying up the work, if you like. If your line manager doesn't know that you're not experiencing the type of work that you require, they can't actually do anything about it. And if you don't ask, you don't get, in essence. So your line manager quite often is that conduit to the resourcing team or whoever, to try and at least get you the right type of experience. Of course, making sure that you are actually prepared for that experience. So there's no point in nagging your line manager that you want to do something, let's say lead a study, when you haven't really thought about what that entails. Or yeah. Do you just think, that's the next thing I want to do, I'm going to go and do it? So actually, you could potentially be, you know, dropping yourself in it completely. I think that's not helpful. So actually, it's talking about and planning these things and making sure that an individual is prepared. So if they want to lead, then it's making sure that they've got the right kind of coaching, or maybe a mentor, or being asked the right questions along the way, that they're getting direction when they need it, support when they need it, and then as they grow in confidence, kind of slowly taking that away and allowing them to move on themselves.
Yeah. If you think about these kind of growing your skills and you know, being able to deliver at the next level, there's, you can have kind of formal training on things like that. You can have on-the-job training, and then you have maybe, you know, all the usual things that you do anyway. In terms of the proportion of that from a kind of time commitment perspective, how do you think, you know, is the ratio between these three different things?
So I suppose formal training is probably the smallest amount, actually. I think in general, it's quite nice to learn about something in a sort of short, sharp session, get the information. But if you don't use it, then it's quite easy to lose it, I would say. But sometimes it's getting that training at the right time. That in itself can be quite difficult as well. But more valuable can be the kind of specific coaching, or having the right mentor, or having just somebody in the background that's supporting. That I would say would be a greater percentage of the type of support and learning that one can get. And then there's what an individual does for themselves, what they go away and learn about, maybe in their own time as well, because that demonstrates quite a inclination towards motivation for learning, I suppose.
Actually, that's a really, really important point. I do learn a lot on my own time, mm-hmm. on my, you know, that's not company time or whatsoever. That's for me an investment in myself and investment in my kind of long-term growth. And I would do that whether my company pays for it or not. I read books, I'm being active in the community, all these kind of different things. So don't expect that your company, you know, pays for everything that you want to do. You know, if you want to read a book about a specific topic or things like that, expect that you do that outside of your kind of usual work hours. If you want to become a better programmer, yeah, expect that you probably need to put in some hours outside of work to grow your skills. Not everything needs to be kind of done within the work hours. I listen to a lot of books while I'm actually running or things like that, so you can combine these things also with having fun along the way. So that's a formal training. But I think what's really, really important is to challenge yourself on the day-to-day tasks that you have. There's so much things during the day that you're doing where you can push yourself outside of your comfort zone, where you can push yourself to learn something, where you can push yourself to, for example, apply a new technique to program more elegantly, or to be a more effective communicator, a more effective presenter, a more effective listener, a more effective influencer at work. Yeah, so our work provides us with lots of different opportunities to grow. Each meeting we can see as a laboratory of all kind of different influencing and communication skills. And we can use each of these occasions to become better and grow our skills in there. What I think is needed there is that you know what you need to look out for. So you need to have a little bit of a, you know, a common understanding. What are, for example, good soft skills you need to develop so that you can actually, you know, abstract what you're seeing, that you understand what is good communication and what is good influencing, what is good listening, what is, you know, how does a good run meeting look like, these kind of things. But once you have this basic understanding, you can use each and every meeting to improve your meeting skills. Every communication, you can improve your communication skills. Every presentation, you can improve your presentation skills. Every program that you set up new, you can try to improve your programming skills. So all these kind of, that is, I think, another kind of mindset on that part, that it's not just doing the work, but it's growing by doing the work. That I think is really important. And that is, you know, the bulk of the time that we spend at work and that we spend in our life. We shouldn't just, you know, turn the handle. It should be something also for us in there.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that probably has quite a big impact on how people feel about their work as well. If they are just turning up, then they're probably not really enjoying their job. They're not really enjoying what they do. But when you feel that drive to do something better, to learn more about what you're doing and to do it, as you say, to do it better. And I think in particular with the soft skills, that's an area where I think probably training courses are actually quite effective, because you can immediately take something away from them and start using them. And they're the sort of things that do need to be practiced, especially for programmers, I think. I think programmers pushing themselves out of their comfort zone with some of the communication things, the influencing, maybe leading meetings, they are more of a challenge. And unfortunately, quite often to practice those, we need to do things like role playing, which I think we're all uncomfortable with, actually. So,
yeah, but I have used role play myself quite effectively. So with my supervisor in the past, where I knew I was going into an uncomfortable situation, and did a role play beforehand to kind of experience how that could be. And my former supervisor was really quite nice in that she could be, let's say, more mean than other person, or more controversial than the other person, and that could always kind of set me up for success. And also in terms of another role play that I really enjoyed was about the GBA hearing. So the GBA is the payer board in Germany on the national level, where if you want to get a new drug reimbursed through the national security system, national insurance system, you need to go through that. And it's quite intense hearing. And the role play beforehand was really, really good to hone in our communication skills, hone in on our executive presence in the meeting, hone in on how we come across, and as well as all the kind of contents that we would be asked. But that was the easiest piece, is the kind of the communication and clearly communication and getting the messages across was far more important. Speaking about kind of soft skills and technical skills, that's actually a really, really important part of the career planning. How do you see these kind of different skills develop over a career?
Usually in the positive direction, I would say, rather than people coming into themselves. No, I do. I think just as individuals get more experience of interacting with each other, and I mean, there's that whole thing with the importance of feedback. I mean, such an important thing to have in any working group is feedback, honest feedback, constructive feedback, so that people can learn more about the way that they communicate and maybe understand how they have an impact on other people. So I think it does come down to experience, and it is one of those areas where I do think people do have to push themselves a little bit out of their comfort zone, maybe to carry on with that experience. It would be easy for a programmer to come into the industry and without the encouragement of a line manager and without some objectives that were set for them, they might never develop their soft skills. But that is actually what your line manager's for. That's what your objective's for. And so having sort of objectives that are useful in a well-rounded way is very important, I think. And so I'm always setting a soft skills objective for my line reports.
Yeah, and it's completely the same is true for statisticians. Mm-hmm. I think if you want to be more and more influential, that directly implies that you need to be honing in on your influencing skills. And just because you're technically a superstar doesn't mean that you get that across and that people listen to you and act on what you're thinking. So my experience is that the more you're, in terms of the career, you get more to more senior levels, and that doesn't need to be necessarily more line management responsibilities, but more senior levels also in purely technical tracks, it becomes more and more important to have good, what we call soft skills, good people skills in interacting with people, influencing people, selling your ideas to others. That becomes more and more important.
Absolutely.
We will, in a few minutes, go to the questions, by the way. So if you have any questions, then type these into the chat. I already see a couple of questions coming. So Please continue to type some into the chat and we'll get to them in a minute. There's one last piece I wanted to speak about in terms of career, or maybe two pieces. One is kind of the technical side of things and technical knowledge that people should develop. Would you recommend people have more of a general kind of understanding of lots of different techniques, or more kind of concentrate on one single piece, maybe, you know, becoming the best visualization programmer in R, or becoming, you know, the best Bayesian statistician or whatsoever? What's your kind of view on that?
Honestly, I think it probably does come down to the individual, but I think in general, what you end up with is that most people start their career and they lay a fairly solid foundation, which gives them a broad range of skills. So I think in general, a statistician wouldn't come out from doing their master's and just leap into the specialist area of Bayesian. They probably would want to lay down a fairly good range of exposure to different study styles, different designs. Their role within a study would vary, and that's the same with programmers as well. You know, having that broad range of experience is important before specializing. And I think people just need to go into specialization with their eyes open, really. They need to realize that they need to be happy with it. In times like we're in at the moment, where, you know, maybe there's a bit of uncertainty going on, you always want to be able to rely on other skills as well. Your specialist area may not be in demand at the time, so having those other skills to come back to is good. I know statisticians who program really, really well, because if they need to, they could go and get a contract programming if they wanted to do that, for instance. So but having a specialist area that really interests you and drives you is absolutely fine, I think. But it's just being aware that you shouldn't, you need to have a backup plan, I think. And also, I think you need to be a bit careful that you don't get pigeonholed, because sometimes what happens is that people get really good at something. They're actually no longer actually particularly interested in it. They've been diverted off course. They get pigeonholed and they're somewhere that they don't want to be. So they kind of got to pull out of that somehow. So,
yeah. I completely see that. There's basically two sides of the same coin. You want to be known for something. You want to have brands, be an expert in that particular field. But the flip side of the coin is that, you know, then you're just seen through that lens. But I think it's always good to have a personal brand, and that being attached to both your soft skills, your leadership skills, as well as to certain technical topics, because then more senior people will remember you much more easily if they know, okay, she's really good on visualization and he is really good on non-parametric statistics and she is really good in Bayesian statistics and so on. That will help a lot in terms of the last point that I actually want to speak about, and that is exposure. I think exposure is probably the number one driver for a successful career. And what I mean by exposure is that you are widely seen in terms of what you're capable of, what are your strengths, and where you are heading. And that is both within and outside of your company. And that requires that you network with lots of different people, that you are visible to lots of different people. Because only when you're visible to these people, only then they can consider you to move you into a certain position. Yeah. Being it kind of promotion to the next level, or whether that is, you know, considering you for an opening in a completely different area of the business, in different area of the department, or maybe even different company. Yeah. Only if you have that exposure, if people know about your profile, know about your brand in a positive way, hopefully, only then you can get these opportunities. And I think that is really, really important. You need to basically market yourself as a brand. That might sound pretty salesy, but it's actually the truth. It's maybe a truth that we don't like to hear. Maybe think of us, what we talk about, what we kind of produce, and our performance speaks for itself. Unfortunately, it doesn't. So you need to consciously market yourself all the time, because you never know what kind of opportunities come up. I was recently talking to Lucy Rowell about that. She's the chair of PSI, and about quite interesting careers that also led her outside of statistics. And she was approached because she has this wide network. She has this, build lots of different connections into the different units. And she also lets these other people know that she's interested in going into other directions. So these are the things that you can do to market yourself. Any thoughts on that for you, Diana?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I quite often have an objective for my line reports that they have to raise their profile, usually initially within the company, but then outside of the company. So raising your profile within any group of people, really important for your career. It's about saying, I'm here, I'm not part of the wallpaper, I'm here, and this is what I can do. And when you, it is self-marketing in effect. I think everybody is not the same. Everybody's got these individual skills, and that's what you want to be recognized for. And I think these industry organizations are really important for that as well, because that's part of the networking and getting involved, volunteering for those things. And again, we come back to the point where, it's investing in yourself, because a lot of that stuff has to be done in your own time, because it is for yourself. It's for raising your profile. It's about building your personal brand and getting yourself known. And that is why maybe presenting, going to conferences and presenting, or presenting in one day meetings or single day events, that type of thing, presenting webinars for your company, all of those type of things can be really, really important for raising your profile. But it doesn't have to start there. It can start small. It can start with starting to present lunch and learn, starting to present things that are in your team meetings, knowledge sharing. It's just starting somewhere and then building on it.
Yeah, there are many more opportunities than, being directly the keynote speaker at a PSI conference. You can start by, helping with the internal communications in your company, and helping there to, help other people understand what you're working on, what you've achieved, what you have, how the things you have developed can help others to work more effectively. Present that internally, and present it at conferences, like you said. You can, and I think PSI, for example, is a really, really great opportunity. It's a community that lives by all the different volunteers. And all these different volunteers, of course, work very, very closely with each other. And that is a really, really nice opportunity to grow your network, to make connections outside of your company. And that helps you to have a much more kind of robust plan in the future, that you're not just dependent on your line manager and nobody else knows about you. Yeah. So, but there's lots of people within and outside of your company know about what you're capable of, and that you're actually a nice person to work with, because that is another really important thing. It's not just about what you do and how you do it, but also whether people love to work with you. Nobody wants to have someone in their team that is not, likable, so to say. So that's another really, really important thing to have in mind. Okay, very good. Now, we talked a lot about the career. We talked about different mindsets in terms of the career, what kind of motivational drivers we have in the career. We talked also about this notion of what actually is a successful career. That doesn't need to be, you know, the VP of statistics doesn't need to be the kind of only career goal that you can have. And what you can personally do in terms of your self-reflection, in terms of your branding, in terms of your exposure to have to get to a robust career planning. So in the last couple of minutes, let's go to the different questions. And you can still type in questions into the chat box, and then we'll answer these. So the first question is about, what are the pointers for mid-career learnings? Diana, what's your answer to that one?
Mid-career learnings. Is this, oh, this sounds like I've got stuck, actually, doesn't it, a bit? Yes, absolutely. I mean, so for some people, they're actually, you know, not everybody needs to keep going forward. That's probably the first point to make. Not everybody wants to keep going forward. People are motivated by different things, you know, whether that's interesting work or it's actually just being able to have a flexible sort of working environment and job and being able to balance that, let's say, with a family life or whatever else is going on in the world. But for them, when you've kind of got to that mid level and you are looking for what next, it is really about exploring all the things that are in the world, shall we say, of this function. So, you know, we talked a bit about, you mentioned PSI, and there are other organizations where topics might be presented that pique your interest. So I think it's about if you feel like you've stalled and you need to find something else, it's actually looking, it's researching more and finding other things. But is it just that you've stalled because you're not getting the right type of experience and you need to talk to your line manager more about, I need more challenge, I need more technical experience, or I want more project management experience? It's finding the thing that you want to move forward, and the thing that you're driven to move forward. So it's, first of all, I would say identification of the thing that helps you move forward, that you want to move forward towards, shall we say. Coming up with a plan of how to get there, and yep, finding that training, finding that the resources, the support that you want to get there.
Yeah, I think one other point in terms of, you know, if you're at that mid-career level, it's very often the decision, do you want to become more a technical specialist, and mm-hmm. you want to kind of grow in some more technical career and focus on that? Or do you want to go for the administrative career and get more and more hands off in terms of statistics and or programming and become more and more kind of an administrative leader? That is, I think, very often also the question. Or maybe you want to become self-employed. Yeah, or maybe want to run your own company. That's probably an exception. Yeah, but that's another, you know, way to go. And like Matt and Emma chose that direction.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I founded Veramat about 10 years ago. So that's maybe another way to think about. Yeah. So it says not everything needs to be in corporate bounds. It can be your own corporation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you made an important point there about, you know, it could be that you're coming out away from a technical area. I've spoken to people in the past who have almost, their progression for them has led them away from the thing that they love. And so whether that's programming or statistics, so they're doing more and more administration, more and more of project oversight, and actually that's led them away from what they love. So progression for them is actually getting into a more balanced role where they get to do their technical thing and they get to maybe do a little bit of project management as well, or they get to do their technical thing and they get to do line management. It's identifying that where it is you want to go, what makes up your ideal role, and if you can identify that helps you making a plan of where you want to go.
There's another question here that is really interesting. It's about the problems that lots of, at least in the UK, and that's probably actually right across the world, lots of pharma companies are located in rather expensive areas. So if you can think about kind of the East and the West Coast in the US, the more expensive areas around London. And Basel is for sure also not a cheap city. So sometimes it can be challenging for more junior statisticians or programmers to actually go in these locations because you need to have a quite good salary to actually kind of have a decent life there. One of the points in this question is about remote working opportunities. To be honest, I think it becomes more and more the norm that there's remote workers, especially as freelancers, as contractors. Lots of these are remote workers. I myself, my first teams that I had supervisory responsibilities for were located across four different locations in four different countries in Europe. And so, of course, that is then including remote working. However, if you're very, very early in your career, let's say the first 2 to 3 years, I think you can benefit a lot from working in the office. Yeah. Because you pick up so much things by, just having someone next desk that you can talk to. You're very often also not all the time in meetings. So that's maybe one of the curses of having a more kind of successful career, that you have more and more meetings in your schedule. and then it's actually not so much of a problem where you're located, unless you have a company that is very, very centralized and everybody is in the same spot, then it's usually quite difficult to be a remote person. But I think there's lots of companies now that really help you to succeed in remote working. And to be honest, this whole COVID crisis is probably a driver for much more remote work in the future, because now all the companies are forced to have good capabilities in place if they don't have it yet already. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think it's that this crisis is definitely, hopefully, I was going to make us all better remote working, but it's definitely a big remote working experiment, isn't it? Because we have to be remote. But what it's doing is making organisations think far more about how people stay connected and how people are supported whilst they are remote. I absolutely agree with you that junior members of staff, as people come out of university and start their careers, the benefit of being in the office is infinite. I think they get far more support, they pick up more ideas, just even between themselves, they support each other, they motivate each other, they give each other ideas, and then they learn more from being in the office. That is a given. The challenge that we have at the moment with the COVID-19 crisis is that we have maybe less experienced individuals at home, and it's making sure that they are well supported, and it's making us think harder about how that is, how we're doing that, and maybe there's a lot more communication from people generally, you know, in the way that we work, because you're not just nudging the person next to you, you have to nudge somebody through an instant messenger and hopefully maybe talk to them. Yeah. One of the things that I think we're doing much more is this video conferencing. It's we need to see faces, we need to see people and human contact. So it is a trend. Remote working is definitely a trend, and there are good things and bad things about it, as with a lot of working practices. But it's I think we're going to learn from this quite a lot.
We're nearly at the top of the hour, but I still would like to go through all the different questions. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay. There's another question about, what about the smaller organizations? So let's say you're working in an organization where you have just, you know, five statisticians or, 10 programmers. And there's lots of these organizations, both in the academic setting as well as in CRO and pharma setting, because actually in a numbers perspective, most of the organizations are not the GSKs and Novartis and Lilly's and things like that. It's usually much more smaller entities. What do you think in terms about growing in these kind of more, smaller organizations where there's not kind of, hundreds of programmers and statisticians?
I think it's proportional, really. I think there's lots of opportunities in these organizations because you're potentially doing more different tasks because there is less of you, so that you're getting to see lots of different things. But I believe that there is still just as much opportunity to grow within these organizations. Our organization started really small with Matt and Emma and one statistician, Abby, and she had that benefit of having Matt's experience, to grow her. And then so I think if you've got five statisticians and 10 programmers, it's a similar kind of thing. It's more it's just that it's, I don't know, more personal, I suppose. And it does depend, obviously, on your leaders, their experience. They need to be strong, they need to be good at supporting the people within their team and progressing them.
Yeah, and that's also really important about delegation, and that, not everything needs to be then driven by the head of statistics in this small team, but that everybody can kind of grow in that team, I think. And, what's maybe different in these organizations is that you have the option to report to one line manager. Yeah, in bigger organizations, you might more easily move around. And if you're just, let's say, unlucky with your line, you can more easily kind of switch to another one. But if you have a really good one in these smaller organizations, then you can have the opportunity to get much more behind the scenes looks than in these really, really big organizations where you will just see a very, very small piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a question about whether there's different soft skills needed for CROs and a pharma company.
Ah, that's quite interesting. Broadly, probably not.
That would be my answer as well. No. Because it's all people-based, need to have people, and,
Internal customers, external customers, yeah. So, yeah. It's people, it's still soft skills, it's still influencing, it's still having difficult conversations, whether that's with your client or your line report or the data management department. I mean, I don't think that there really is that much difference. I think that it is possibly important to have strong soft skills in a CRO because you are going to absolutely utilize them, and they will become very important to the way that you work. They should be equally important in a pharmaceutical company. It's just that you may not realize it, I suppose, and so you may not be guided towards how important those are, but absolutely I would say, broadly speaking, the same.
Yeah. There's another question by Ryan Finch about what skills do you feel programmers are missing, or likewise, what do you feel statisticians are missing and could benefit from? And to be honest, my answer there is quite simple. Are these soft skills? Are these influencing skills? We are all trained by our universities in terms of all the technical skills. We all love technical skills. And if you go to a conference, everybody goes to the technical topics. And you'll find lots of very, very good technical statisticians. But if you really want to stand out, then be a good technical statistician and a good leader, good influencer. Then you will really stand out from the crowd, because that is in short supply.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I must just say hello to Ryan because I know Ryan. So hello, Ryan. So yes, soft skills. We look at, I think more and more we look for more that sort of well-rounded experiences. So it's not just somebody who can do something technically. They need to be able to work in a team. They need to be able to resolve conflict, shall we say. They might need to be good at anticipating risks and issues. They need to be able to do a whole host of other things. And so when people come out of university and they've got a first class degree, we're not just looking at that. We're actually looking at all the other things that maybe they've exposed themselves in their life. It might not be enough that they just become academically amazing. They it is these other things that they've already started to expose themselves to, because then they recognize that being a well-rounded individual is actually quite important in the world of work and will actually help with their success.
Yeah. There's another question about if you wanna, grow in your role and you wanna make sure that the company invests in you, how do you best talk to your supervisor about that? And for me, I think I would say that's quite easy. You wanna sell to your supervisor that you wanna bring more value to the company. You wanna help the company do better. And that's the primary goal here for the company. And that's why you want to have, the right tasks and things like that. So it's about having a good trusting relationship with your line manager so that they help you succeed. But for you to have, to enter into this discussion is you can just say, let's speak about how we can, contribute, create more value for the company. I would probably approach it that way. What do you think?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think it's a win-win, isn't it? An individual advances and the company gets more value from that individual as they advance and they take on more skills, and the value added is an important part of that. It shouldn't be a difficult conversation. I really feel like it shouldn't be that. That relationship with your line manager, hopefully, is comfortable and honest, and so that you can go to them and have that conversation and they can help you with it.
The other point is, just asking for feedback. Is there a way that I can do this better, cheaper, faster? Yeah. And get feedback on that and make proposals for doing things better. Yes, that is a development in itself. Sandra Troxiter is asking, is every experience a good experience, or should we be more targeted and say no sometimes to pick up things that we feel is more relevant for our future? I think having a good discussion about what's your strengths and what your weaknesses are, where you want to go, will help you to have that discussion with your supervisor. And I agree, not every experience is an experience that helps you grow and move forward. However, of course, on the other side, there's always some jobs to be done that maybe nobody likes to be done. So I think every now and then everybody needs to eat that frog, but in general, it should be less frogs and more kind of the growth opportunity, I would say. And in terms of saying no, I think it's maybe you can point to someone else who would be better equipped, or who would be in a better situation, or to do that.
And I mean, it's so I feel like it should be a sort of maybe a fairly common conversation. Not that we should always be saying no, of course, but and as you say, there's always kind of boring tasks to be done. We can't just cherry pick what we want to do out of our day and go, well, that's it, that's going to what's going to advance me. We have to, there's balance in our roles. But if you are being asked to do something that you're really not suitable to do, so if you don't have the right personality to be a line manager, it could be that you have that discussion with your line manager where you say, well, why do you think I would be the one that is going to be the line manager? It would be far more beneficial for the company to have somebody who has this skill set, which I don't, or I don't have that personality. And likewise for things like, you know, a technical individual who say, I want to take on these more technical challenges. But if they're really not getting the basics part of the technical work, then you need to build that foundation first, I suppose. So it's, yeah, there will be things that we want to say no to, but it's based in the arguments, it's based at looking self-analysis of what we're good at.
Okay, last question, and that's really a really nice and interesting one. It's about, how can you get more technical help and support even though you're expected to be at a senior level based on your years in the industry? And I think that's a really, really good question. And I can very, very much relate to that, you know, if you're 20 years in the industry, maybe you're just expected to know certain things that you don't know. My best experience for that is a discussion I had with Walt Offen quite some time ago. Walt Offen is now retiring or has just retired from AbbVie, and he had a very, very long career at Lilly where I worked as well. And when I first met him, he was already probably the most senior decision from a technical level at Lilly. And he was asking me all kind of different things. Yeah. He had a very, very humble approach to his own knowledge. Yeah, so he knew a lot of things, but he was always very, very curious, and he was not afraid to ask seemingly stupid questions. Yeah. So I think that is probably something, you know, of a mindset, of an approach that we should retain through our career, that we stay humble, that we don't fake knowledge, that we, you know, always, you know, are open to asking these stupid questions, because the moment we stop asking questions, we'll stop learning and we'll start dying, so to say.
I think that's an important sort of company culture sort of aspects, really, is that within companies, if you encourage questions always, no matter how stupid, and that people understand that any question can be asked, and it could be from somebody who is inexperienced, new to the company, new to the industry, or it could be somebody who has lots and lots of years of experience, because in this industry there is just this vast and growing sort of skills that we could learn. You know, not everybody knows everything. I mean, out of, you know, as a SaaS programmer, I probably know less than 5% of what all the things that SaaS can do. And I've been programming for 20 years and I'm a fairly okay programmer, but it's not, you're never going to learn everything. And everybody knows different things. So you have to have that company culture of being able to ask other people. And so if you're a senior statistician or a senior programmer, it's accepting that other people know things. And actually, it could be that they're straight out of university and they've learned something at university that you didn't learn. And they can tell you about. And rather than being, oh, I'm really embarrassed about that, it should be more, I'm really interested to teach me.
Yeah, yeah. And so if you have that problem, and I can completely relate to it, you know, sometimes I also think like, well, I'm that long in the industry, I should actually know that, but I don't know, then I think it's, you know, throttle your ego and be open and embrace that you just don't know it, and find ways to learn, engage with your colleagues, go to conference courses, attend trainings, and stay curious, because I think staying curious throughout your career will make sure that you're happy throughout your career, and that will help you to, you know, keep motivated, because in the end, that is really what for me makes a successful career, is that you always are motivated throughout your career, that you're always growing. And that when you finally retire, you even on your last day, you think, I learned something new today. That would be, I think, for me, a really, really successful career. Okay, with that, thanks so much, Diana. Thanks so much, Louise, in the background for helping with the organization of the webinar. And then thanks so much for Veramed for setting up this webinar, the live recording of a podcast episode.
Thank you.
Speak to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. And for this episode, also, thanks so much for the team at Veramed with helping to organize this live recording. It was a lot of fun. Please visit theeffectivestatistician.com to find the show notes and learn more about this podcast to boost your career as a statistician in the health sector. And don't forget, tell your colleagues about this podcast so that more people can benefit from this content. Like always, reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.